Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to wear short sweatshirts that go baggy at the waist, and to boldly go where no man has gone before. Janet Street Porter's bedroom. Captain's log.
Yes?
Good morning, Captain. Tell me, how is your lovely wife, Mrs. Log?
She's much better, thank you.
Excellent. Carry on, Captain's log. Stardate 3748. Captain James T. Crick, Commander, USS Enterprise. No, that is not a mistake. I did indeed say Captain Crick, for my surname has been pronounced Crick for the past 3 weeks. In fact, ever since the Enterprise landed on the planet Krall, a planet whose strange atmosphere contaminates anyone who sets foot there, causing them to mispronounce all names with the letter K in them. Hence my name, Captain Crick. The name of our mission, Star Turk. And the name of my Vulcan colleague and chief officer, Mr. Pox. However, this is a condition which I hope will soon be rectified. Indeed, Mr. Pox has one of our best lab technicians working on an antidote at this very moment. Isn't that correct, Pox?
Knickers.
I beg your pardon?
Knickers, Captain Crick.
My dear Pox, using such language is hardly likely...
That is the name of the laboratory technician who is working on an antidote. His name is spelled K-E-R-S-N-I-C-K. But as I, like you, was contaminated on the planet Krall, when I try to say his name, it comes out as Knickers.
Ah, and who in his search for an antidote is assisting Knickers?
Knackers.
Does that mean he spells his name K-E-R-S-N-A-C-K?
No, it means I'm getting fed up with your banal questions. Surely we have more important things to discuss.
Excuse me, one moment, please, the phone.
Stop, Jim. My Vulcan intuition tells me it would be an act of great foolishness to answer that call.
Why?
We haven't got a telephone.
But surely, Pox, is that not a telephone we can hear ringing even as we speak?
It would appear so. Yet because I know for a fact that we do not have a telephone, my logical mind tells me that such an occurrence is completely illogical. Yet if I can hear a telephone ringing, logic tells me that we must have a telephone. But if so, how is that logically possible?
Pox?
Yes?
Don't be such a prat. For you see, my dear Pox, what your logical mind has failed to account for is the illogical logicality of the logistics of the logical logic.
Which is?
That in space anything is possible, which I would have thought that you, as a member of the 5 million miles high club, would have appreciated. And now, with your permission, I will answer the phone. Yes, who is this?
Oh, you've decided to answer at last, have you? About time, too. I'm calling about that slanderous statement you made earlier about Janet Street Porter.
Pardon?
You heard what you said about Janet Street Porter's bedroom and no man ever having been there before.
What is it, Jim?
It appears to be someone speaking some primitive sort of English.
You primitive, you wooden American bimbo, you. Now listen, about what you said about Janet Street Porter.
Janet Street Porter.
Yes, and I...
Tell me, are you the Janet Street Porter in question?
No, but I do look a bit like her, even though I don't sound anything at all like her.
You don't sound anything like her?
No, when Janet Street Porter talks, you can hardly understand what she says.
I'm sorry, what was that you said?
I said, look, you've no right to make fun of me, her. You've no right to make fun of her just because of the way she looks. I mean, she can't help the way she looks, can she?
No, but she could stay in.
How dare you? Well, you're not getting away with this. I'll show you. I'm going to switch you over. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to switch over to another channel.
Please, there's no need for that. I'm sure we could talk, and if we could...
Even as I speak to you tonight from the BBC Television Theatre here in London, Shepherd's Bush, I...
Oh, push off, Wogan. What's on ITV?
therefore, I would like him to leave the hotel, Mrs. Greenbaum.
Oh, it's more like a hotel. One of my favorite programs, this.
Did you hear what I just said, Mrs. Greenbaum?
Yes, I heard you, Mr. Blomfeld. But I can't say I understand you. You say you want Lincoln and me to leave your hotel.
Not you, Mrs. Greenbaum. Just your husband.
But why, Mr. Blomfeld? Why on earth do you want Lincoln to leave your hotel?
Because he is dead, Mrs. Greenbaum.
No, Lincoln isn't dead, Mr. Blomfeld.
Then why is he in a coffin?
He is resting in peace.
Mrs. Greenbaum, I would hardly call being dragged down 4 flights of stairs and into the dining room 3 times a day resting in peace.
Now, I'm really glad you brought up the subject of the dining room, Mr. Blomfeld, because I was wondering if maybe I was due for a small rebate on account of Lincoln. I mean, he just isn't eating any food at all.
Nobody is eating any food at all, Mrs. Greenbaum. In fact, nobody but you and your dead husband's coffin has been near the dining room since the day you were
here. You know, there is the most peculiar smell in your dining room, Mr. Blomfeld. Maybe that's the reason people aren't eating. Maybe if you was to find out where the smell is coming from.
The smell is coming from your husband's coffin, Mrs. Greenbaum.
From Lincoln's coffin? No, I just can't believe that, Mr. Blomfeld. That just can't be. Because Mr. Otis Bride of the Paradise Funeral Parlor did a real fine job on Lincoln. A real fine job. I mean, Lincoln smelled just beautiful. Sort of lavendery.
When he died in 1982, maybe. And I am going to have to insist that you remove him from the hotel premises forthwith.
Well, I don't really know about that, Mr. Blomfeld. Now, where did I see where it says a lady can't bring her dead husband to your hotel?
Well, will you at least keep him out of the swimming pool? Well,
but Lincoln enjoys his daily float, Mr. Blomfeld. Oh, that reminds me, I'd like you to have a word with that Mrs. Van Dierden about her 2 small boys. They keep using Lincoln's coffin to dive off of. And, well, it just isn't very dignified, is it?
It is hardly dignified him being in the swimming pool in the first place, is it? Now, if you would just do as I say.
Oh, blast. Someone at the front door, just when it was getting interesting.
Good evening, madam. I'm in the neighborhood.
If you're selling something, you can clear off. I'll never buy it from because of my religion.
What religion is that?
Nomadic Buddhist.
Nomadic Buddhist?
Yeah, a small religious sect who live in the desert in tents.
And they never buy at the front door?
Well, if they live in tents, they haven't got no front door.
But then they're not buying at their front doors. It's not because of their religion, is it? They're not buying at their front doors because they don't have front doors to buy at.
So?
Well, you do have a front door. Therefore, there is no reason why you should not buy at your front door.
All right, what are you selling?
Front doors.
I've already got a front door, haven't I?
I also sell encyclopedic dictionaries.
What do I want with a dictionary? I can't say proper words what I already know, can I? Goodbye.
Okay, sirrah, sirrah. Well, there's always next door.
Yes?
Good day, sir. I represent Cheney's new single-volume encyclopedic dictionary and a front door...
I'll take one.
What?
I'll take an encyclopedic dictionary.
No, you're wrong there.
What?
Well, no, here, look, see, page 546, how to sell. First, the salesman must make the customer desire the product. Well, I haven't done that yet, have I?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realise.
Ah. And why didn't you realise? Because you don't own a copy of Cheney's new single-volume encyclopedic dictionary and haven't read the section on how to sell. I mean, how can you afford to be without this essential reference book compiled by no less than 237 experts, all world-renowned in their own field, which comes to you tastefully bound in Moroccan Skyvertex, each of its 3,652 pages crammed full of facts and figures on any subject you care to name?
I'll take one.
No, you won't.
No?
You will now say one of 3 things, and I quote, A, I don't want your rotten encyclopedia. B, I'd like time to think it over. Or C, I can't afford it. Now, which one are you, A, B, or C?
C.
I can't afford it. Yes, well, most people say that. That is, until I point out to them that the cost of this magnificent treasure of knowledge works out at less than the price of a packet of cigarettes a day. Unbelievable, but true. Yes, all you need do is give up smoking and this truly beautiful volume can be yours.
I will take one.
Not yet. Because now you say either A, I don't smoke, or B, that's all very well, but I've tried to give up smoking and I can't. Well?
That's all very well, but I've tried to give up smoking and I can't.
Page 832. How to give up smoking.
I'll take one. I'll take
no,
one.
No, you will not.
Why not?
Because I've only got one bloody copy of it, haven't I?
Oh, well, suit yourself, then. Oh, excuse me, sir.
Yes?
I'm with the Television Audience Research. Would you mind answering a few questions?
Oh, go on, then.
Good, good. Now, did you watch any television last Tuesday evening?
Last Tuesday evening? Let's see, wasn't that a night I went to at Pictures? Yes, I think that was a night I went to that new anti-war film.
Oh, which one's that?
Bomb Reagan. You ought to see it. It's very good. It starts off with this scene between an army colonel and a potential recruit, and the colonel says to the recruit,
"Sir, you'd like to join the army, would you, Mr. Fairbrother?"
"Oh, yes, sir. Very much, sir."
"Why?"
"Well, sir, I have a degree in electronic engineering, which I feel will be put to very good use in the technological army. That is the modern army of today."
"I see. Any other reason?"
"Oh, yes, sir. The outdoor life appeals to me, as does the prospect of the fellowship and camaraderie of my fellow soldiers. And I would also enjoy the chance to travel and the chance to take part in many sports that being in the army will give me the opportunity to do."
"Yes. You see, you appear to have the wrong idea about the purpose of the army, Mr. Fairbrother."
"Right, yes, sir."
"You see, our main function is to kill people."
"Kill people, sir?"
"Yes. Tell me, what do you like at killing people?"
I'm not quite sure what you mean, sir.
"Killing people, shooting them, cutting their throats, dropping bombs on them, napalming them, squashing them with tanks, obliterating them from the face of the earth, exterminating them. Killing people. What do you like at killing people?"
"Well, I don't know, sir. I've never had to kill anybody."
"Yes, aren't too sure, are we, Mr. Fairbrother? No matter, we'll soon find out. Join me over at the window, would you? Now, take this grenade."
"Take it, man."
"Sir."
"Good. Now, you see that sentry over there by the main door?"
"Yes, sir."
"I want you to throw the grenade at him."
"At the sentry, sir?"
"Blow him into a billion pieces."
"But, he's a British soldier, sir."
"Yes."
I mean, the poor man's just standing there."
"Well, they also serve who only stand and wait, Mr. Fairbrother. And in his case, his waiting days are over. You think of this as his chance of glory. So come on, show me what you're made of by showing me what he's made of." "Which..." "That's rather good, that, wasn't it?" "Now, come on, man."
"Oh, sir, I must protest."
"Throw the grenade, man."
"Sir." "Ah.
Got the bugger." "Well, congratulations, Mr. Fairbrother. Well done."
The army will accept me then, sir?"
"Yes, you're just the sort of chap we're looking for here at HQ NATO Peacekeeping Force." "Yes, like I say, it was one of the best war films I've ever seen. It was a bit like Rambo, but with acting. Next scene was good and all.
I'm sure it was. But you said you wouldn't mind answering a few questions about your TV viewing."
"Oh, no, sorry, yeah, right. Now, far away, then."
"Yes, on Wednesday, there was a new situation comedy series called The Family of Man. Did you by any chance see it?"
"Family of Man?"
"Yes, that's spelled M-A-N-N, Man. Family of Man. It's a play on words. Oh. It was all about a 45-ish sensible wife, her husband, who on the face of it hasn't got the brains to tie his own shoelaces, but who nevertheless keeps coming out with witty lines, and their scatty teenage daughter with a nice bottom who keeps coming through doors and grinning like a loony."
"Oh, yeah, I think I did. Didn't the wife come home unexpectedly, see her husband lying in a pair of lace panties which he'd secretly bought for her birthday present, and mistakenly think he was having an affair with someone else?"
No. That was Family Matters. All about the Matters family, with the 45-ish sensible wife, her husband, who on the face of it hasn't got the brains to tie his own shoelaces, but nevertheless keeps coming out with witty lines, and their two scatty teenage daughters with nice bottoms who keep coming through doors and grinning like loonies. No, Family of Man was about the husband seeing his wife knitting a pair of baby's booties for a friend, mistakenly thinking she was going to have a baby.
And going out to buy her a big bunch of red roses. Yes, I saw that.
That wasn't Family of Man. That was Fool of the Family. It's all about the family, with the 45-ish sensible wife, the husband, or the face
of it. Hadn't got the brains, the ties, don't shoelaces,
but who nevertheless keeps going out with witty life. Their two scatty teenage daughters, with a nice bottle of the door, and grinning like loonies. The St. Bernard dog, which occasionally pees on the carpet and gets an unrehearsed laugh. Oh, and the wife's brother, who's so thick that if he fell into a barrel of tits, he'd get out sucking his thumb. That, you see, was Fool of the Family. No, you see, in the Family of Man, the husband, after mistakenly thinking that his wife is going to have a baby, goes out to celebrate, comes home after having a few drinks too many, mistakenly goes into the house next door, and gets into bed with his neighbor's wife with hilarious results.
Oh, yeah, of course, now I remember.
So you saw it then?
Yeah.
Right load of crap, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Keep down, Constable Oggins. Those bank robbers may be armed.
Sir.
Hand me that load hailer.
We present the 17th minute of the show. Each week at this time, we will be devoting the 17th minute of the show to something unique in radio broadcasting. And in our first show, we feature the debut of that up-and-coming young soul singer, a girl who is half Greek and half black American, Miss Donna Kebab. Miss Kebab was...
I'm sorry,
that's next week. Tonight we feature Mr. Arthur Scargill reading the fairy story Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Mr. Scargill.
Thank you. Once upon a time, there were three National Union of Honey Workers bears. Father socially deprived bear, mother socially deprived bear, and baby socially deprived bear. And they all lived together in a criminally high-rated, rate-cap, dump, rat-infested, totally inadequate council house in the woods. One day, they all went off to picket at their honey pit. As after 7 years of Tory misrule, they were grossly underpaid and had no alternative but to withdraw their labour and take strike action. When a girl by the name of Goldilocks, who was on her way through the woods, noticed the house of the three bears and went into it. She didn't know it was wrong to go into somebody else's house without their permission, because her father was a policeman and she'd seen him do it. On the table were three bowls of porridge. Now, in the past, the three bears have been able to afford a substantial meal of meat stew. But under the yoke of Thatcherism, and I want to make myself very clear on this point, they were damn lucky to be able to afford porridge. Goldilocks tried the porridge of Father Socially Deprived Bear, but that was too hot. Then she tried the porridge of Mother Socially Deprived Bear, but that was too cold. Then she tried the porridge of Baby Socially Deprived Bear, and that was just right. So, she ate it all up. And then, not content with that, and with an underhanded deviousness and downright skullduggery that would have done credit to Thatcher herself, she mixed together the bowls of too hot and too cold and ate them as well. And then the wolf came in, and Goldilocks said, "Oh, Grandma, what a big mouth you've got." And the wolf said, "Yes, I borrowed it from Neil Kinnock." And Goldilocks said to
the wolf... Right, that's enough, Mr. Scargill.
No, let me finish. I've had the courtesy to come here. Anyway, I haven't read the best bit yet, where the wolf escapes in a steamroller and flattens the complete Tory front bench and finally frees the country from the Thatcherite fascist regime.
Yes, I'm sorry, but you've had whatever your minute.
No,
And now it's back to the action.
Hoggins, did you hear me? I said, hand over that loud hailer.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Do you reckon you'll be able to talk the robbers into freeing the hostages, sir?
Just leave it to me, Hoggins. Here we go.
Attention!
Can you hear me? This is Inspector Froggett of the police. What are your demands?
I can hear you. One moment.
Quick, Lenny. Where's that note with our demands written on it?
Here you are.
Here are our demands. We want 2 dozen beef burgers, 2 dozen bombs.
This is a shopping list. You give me a grocery list.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, it must be in my other pocket.
Well, give it me. I ain't got all day.
Hey, I don't seem to have it.
Oh, well, that's great, isn't it, eh? I mean, how am I supposed to give the police our demands if I don't know what our demands are?
Well, hey, how about if we demanded a bottle of tomato ketchup?
What?
Well, we've already asked for hamburgers and bomb cakes. I like tomato ketchup on my hamburgers, you know.
Look, you twannock! We've got to get out of here!
Now, can't you remember what our demands are? I mean, you was the one wrote them down. Well, wouldn't it something to do with a car?
Yeah, a car. A car. A car that takes to the airport.
Right.
Here are our demands! We want a car to take us to the
airport. Hey, just a minute.
What?
We're already at the airport.
What?
Well, we robbed the airport bank safe. We're already at the airport.
Oh, right.
Here are our demands. We want a car to take us away from
here. No, no.
What?
No, we don't want it to be taken away from the airport. We want to be at the airport, don't we? I mean, our demands are for an aeroplane so we can fly off and escape with the money.
Well, your demand might be for an aeroplane. My demand certainly isn't.
Well, why isn't it?
Because I get airsick. Whenever I go on an aeroplane, I'll get violently airsick, so that's out. Our demand is for a boat. A car that takes us to the docks and a boat.
Here are our demands. We want...
Hey! I'll get seasick on a boat.
What?
Well, boats make me seasick. There's no way you're getting me on a boat.
Well, there's no way you're getting me on an aeroplane.
Well, there's no way you're getting me on a boat.
Here are our demands. 2 dozen beef burgers. 2 dozen bomb cakes. A bottle of tomato sauce. 2 coffees.
Looks as though they intend digging in, Hoggins. Right, radio their demands into HQ. And, make it an extra beef burger, will you? I'm feeling a bit peckish myself.
Roger. Romeo, bravo, tango to HQ. Will you... Oh, blast.
What's the matter?
Our radio's packed in, sir.
Use that phone box then. Go on, jump to it, man.
Stop.
To a disco. Yeah, I went to the American and met him. Here, do you mind, copper? I haven't finished yet.
Sorry, miss, this is an emergency.
Well, it'll just have to wait, won't it, so hop it. Hello, Shell. Sorry about that. It was the first... Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. I was telling you about that American I went out with last night. Probe. No, that was his name. Probe. He said he was christened that because his father was an astronaut. Oh, they'd called him the right name as well, I can tell you. He was trying to probe me all over the place. He said, I'll pretend I'm an astronaut like my dad, and you pretend you're Venus and I have to land on you. Saucy devil. No, he doesn't want to be a real astronaut. He said he was happy in property. He said back in Florida, he just bought this big condominium. This big condominium. 10 stories high and 100 yards long. I said, I bet you can't half get a lot of condoms in that. No. Apparently it doesn't mean that. No. According to Probe, a condominium is what people live in America. Yeah, imagine that. Living in a gigantic 100-yard-long piece of rubber. Oh, just a minute, Shell. Don't go away. Constable, have you got a 10p piece?
Only one, and I need that for urgent police business. Now, if you've quite finished, I'll thank you to vacate that telephone kiosk.
Pig!
Now, there's no need for that sort of talk.
Oh. Why didn't you get out of the way? I told you there was a pig coming.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant that.
Have either of you seen anything of a runaway pig?
Yes, it just knocked me over. And then it proceeded up the high street in a northerly...
Oh, God! It's run slap into that bus!
In a northerly, southerly, easterly and westerly...
Look, Hoggins, will you cut out the funniest please and make that phone call?
All right, sir, yes, sir. Doing it now, sir. Right, sir, yes, right now, sir.
Oh, Hello, is that the police headquarters?
No, this is the Flipping Holidays Travel Agency.
I'm sorry, sir. I must have dialed the wrong number.
Well, that's perfectly all right. I'm sorry about that. Now then, this holiday you'd like to book, when were you thinking of going?
The first week in August.
Yes, and where were you thinking of going to?
France. What's the matter?
Well, it is up to you, of course, sir. It is your money, but France in August? I mean, that's the month all the French people take their holidays. You see, you'd never get near the beach.
Oh, yes, I hadn't thought of that. Right, I'll go somewhere else then. Actually, I've always fancied Spain. you wouldn't advise Spain either.
Mosquitoes, sir. Oh. Mozzies as big as aeroplanes. Yeah, you get bitten to death.
Yes, I had heard you can get mosquitoes in Spain, now you come to mention it. Well, that settles it then. I'll go to Italy. What's wrong with Italy?
And nothing, sir, if you don't mind spending your entire holiday sat on the lavatory. I'll never forget the holiday I had in Naples. See Naples and die. See Naples and diarrhea, my wife.
Well, I see. How about Bulgaria? No.
Just the opposite to Italy, sir. Constipation. When I went there, I was bunged up the entire fortnight.
Yes, well, I don't want that, do I? I suppose I could try Greece.
Well, I tried everything, sir. Silver fit. Cenopods.
No, I'm sorry. No, I mean for a holiday, you know. The country, Greece.
Oh, yes.
What's it like, Greece? You wouldn't recommend Greece either?
No, they're far too hot in August.
Turkey. Oh, very well. In that case, I'll go to... I haven't said anything yet.
No, but you were going to say Portugal, weren't you, sir?
No.
Oh.
I was going to say Austria. Is there any country at all you would recommend?
Well, there is Yugoslavia, sir.
Well, what's it like?
Oh, magnificent, sir. Yes. Beautiful country, Yugoslavia. Breathtaking mountain ranges, picturesque countryside, lovely people, nice climate, cheap wine. Good exchange rate, perfect, yes. Oh, yes, if I had to pick one country in the whole world in which to spend a holiday, I would pick Yugoslavia.
You seem really taken with it.
I am, sir, I am. Yugoslavia is really fantastic.
Right then, I'll go to Yugoslavia.
Very good, sir. And where in Yugoslavia would you like to go?
Dubrovnik. Sarajevo. Look, I'm not going through all that again. Just put me into an hotel in Casablanca.
Oh, Casablanca, now that is a place I can recommend, sir.
Oh, you've been there, have you?
No, not exactly, but my partner has, haven't you, Rick?
Casablanca? You betcha I've been there. It was in Casablanca that I first heard the song. You remember the song, Sam? Why don't you play it again?
What?
You heard me. Play it again, Sam.
Yes, sure. Sure thing, Rick.
Of all the joints in the world, I had to end up in this one. I could think of better ways of earning a buck than running a travel agency, and that's a fact.
You have been listening to Star Turk 2, starring Christopher Godwin, Jeffrey Holland, Susie Blake, and Fred Harris.
I mean, here I am selling airline tickets for Pete's sake, and the only ticket I'm interested in handing out is a one-way ticket to oblivion, courtesy of a 45. That's why I'm about to introduce a brand new ticket service. You've heard of a bucket flight? I'm introducing Kick the Bucket Flight.
The show was written by Terry Ravenscroft.
So if you want to get rid of some cheap hoodlum, just book him in on one of old Rick's Kick the Bucket Flights. For an extra sawbuck, I'll even let you choose the way you want the patsy to croak. By a bullet in the head, a knife in the gut, or an overdose of the airline food.
But produced by Martin Fisher.
Here's looking at you, Martin.